Nigeria Radio, bringing Nigerians in diaspora up to speed. Alright, still Spirit of Nigeria Radio, 7 p.m. Nigeria time. Of course, you know, on a Sunday like this, what else would we be doing other than making the rounds with the doctors? And of course, it's time for Doctor's Round, and Dr. Eji Ahmed is somewhere there in one corner of the world ready to take us on Doctor's Round. Over to you, Eji.
Hey, Toye. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm okay. It could be better,
can
though.
Can you hear me well?
Yes, we can hear you loud and clear.
Excellent. Welcome to Doctor's Round. Welcome to our listeners. Here we are again on Doctor's Round on Spirit of Nigeria Radio and our sister radio. And today we have, as usual, LJ Daddy and other crews. And we're going to be talking about another very important point. Remember, this is your program, and the purpose here is to provide you with information that affects your health. The information that affects your health is important to you because that way you can improve the healthcare services. I would like to introduce the speaker. We're going to take a new spin today because there's something very important, and I would like to have the opinion of our speaker on this very important point. Nigeria is on fire, not only politically, but the fire is even burning the healthcare system. So let me go quickly to introduce our speaker today. Our speaker today is Dr. Ian Takun. Dr. Takun is a pediatrician with specialization in neurodevelopmental disorders. She has worked in various parts of Nigeria before settling in the United Kingdom, where she has her practice. She is a consultant neurodevelopmental pediatrician within the NHS, and she also works independently. She's the co-founder of School Doctor, and she'll be telling us what that means. She's a graduate, like most of the doctors from Nigeria, and some of us are envious, eh? I'll talk about that later, from University of Ibadan. She has an MSc from London, MSc from Birmingham. She has a master's in public health, postgraduate certificate in medical education, which include providing added education. She's a member of the Royal College of Pediatricians and Child Health, also a fellow of the same college and a fellow of West African College. I can go on and on and on. One thing that is important also to note is that she's very interested in empowering Nigerian patient population in order to ask the right question. She runs a podcast. She'll be telling us about that. Dr. Takun, welcome to Doctor's Round.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Ahmed, for having me on this platform. And thank you, everybody, for having me as well. Looking forward to discussions.
Excellent. Welcome. Before we get started, I know you want to talk to us about What you love most, neurodevelopmental disorders among children and bringing up a better society. But there's a problem. And I'll be inviting Dr. Ayanrede to contribute. Dr. Ayanrede, of course, is my colleague on this program, is a co-presenter here. It is the issue of the doctor strike in Nigeria today. This is disheartening. I don't know how you feel about it.
Yes, Dr. Ahmed, it's quite sad, especially when I look at the fact that I was a resident doctor myself in Nigeria, where I did do my West African Fellowship training. And we know what the conditions there were in terms of working. But the doctors in Nigeria worked so hard under very strenuous situations and conditions. And to see that things haven't gotten better, that have pushed doctors to the state where they have to go on strike with the ever-pressing needs in the country. I mean, health in Nigeria is so difficult to get good places where you can be sure of getting credible health, you know, for yourself or your family. And the teaching hospitals are, you know, one of those places that you know you cannot go and get some good standard of care. So to see the resident doctors being pushed to the to going on strike, it's very disheartening. And I just hope our leaders are listening from wherever they are and act on this very quickly, because this shouldn't be happening at all.
Absolutely, I agree with you. And you say that things haven't gotten better. Actually, things have gotten worse, right? It's gotten worse from what it was before. Deji, what do you think? Sorry, Dr. Ayanrede.
Oh, yes. Thank you. I share the sentiment. And certainly to our listeners on Life Radio 107.5 FM in Ibadan. Ibadan, we hail you. Two of us here trained in Ibadan. I owe my medical education to Ibadan. I became a doctor in Ibadan. And I think, I don't want to use words like despicable and disrespectful because they may not be appropriate, but if I were to use those words, it's not fair that people who are providing care for others, if a doctor is worrying, anxious, stressed out, they become unsafe. And we know that doctors who aren't in the best emotional space, either through earnings or other bits, it compromises care. And what's it about these resident doctors that anywhere they go into the world, they excel and do enormously well? So it's something that must be addressed. And for those of us in diaspora, we must stand by our junior colleagues. If we respect them and know that they'll be treating us in our old age, we must.
You're absolutely correct. This is very important and it's so disheartening. I know you're very careful about your choice of words. I say it the way it is. It is disrespectful. It is not safe for the country, because if you have an unhealthy workforce, you're going to have unhealthy performance. So there you go, Nigerian government. There you go, everybody. We're calling on you that you change the system and let people be able to perform their job. How many people go out of the country, go to United Kingdom, go to Canada, go to United States? Nigerians are excelling, and we can do the same thing in Nigeria. Make the environment right. Everywhere needs a greenhouse. Provide the greenhouse for better medical services. Well, that's our call. Shout out to you guys, all the best resident doctors, and pay the house officers. Okay, affronted. Now, welcome to Dr. Zrand again. We're going to be talking today about autism spectrum disorder. This is a neurodevelopmental condition that is associated with difficulties in communication alongside interaction with other people. It is said to be, people confuse it with whether or not there's intellectual disability, whether it can exist all by itself. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention in the States, at least we have some data from there, says about 2% of the children aged about 8 years do have this condition. There's so many types of presentation, and sometimes this condition are missed, especially in our society. Children are misunderstood. They see them as either bad or lazy. but we know there is obvious biological basis for this presentation. However, these individuals may have specific strengths with their attention, with their ability to do some mathematical wonders, and yet, in our society, we may not be recognizing it and reinforcing these special skills. Functional impairment seems to be very important, no doubt about it, but there are areas of concentration, and if we have the right environment, we may nurse those skills. To throw light onto these, it's going to be Dr. Tarkan, as we have said before. So welcome again. But before you go on to that topic, what is this school doctor? Do you work in a school?
Thank you, Dr. Ahmed. So school doctor is a platform which was started in 2015. And it was started by myself and two other colleagues who are both neurodevelopmental pediatricians. And the reason we started that was because we noticed that lots of children with difficulties, there was a barrier between what the teachers understood of these difficulties and how the schools could support them. Many children, surprisingly, even here, were not being picked up on time. So sometimes teachers had labeled children as being quite naughty. Children were being excluded. And these children, they didn't understand, the schools didn't understand that a lot of them had neurodevelopmental disorders. Mm-hmm. Some of these children were excluded from school. Parents were frustrated. Parents thought the children were naughty. So there was this ongoing problem. And therefore, we found that there was just a gap between understanding of what children's difficulties were, even in schools. And children spend a lot of time in schools. It's a place they spend at least 8 hours a day. So we know that as part of our work, we always gather information from schools as well. We decided to set up a platform to bridge that gap between the schools and the parents and health, so that teachers who had difficulties with understanding children's behavior could contact us and ask us whether this was a problem or not, so that those children could be referred for help. Likewise, parents as well could come to us and describe what their children had and enable us to say whether they had a neurodevelopmental disorder or not. Right. So that shortened the interval between this child having help. So parents seeking help from pediatricians would be able to go and get help for their children appropriately. And so that's where school doctor comes in. So we do a lot of training for schools. We train teachers to become aware of these conditions. We offer training for parents, for social workers, for several members of the public. We also have the service side where if people want clinical assessment, they can also contact us. So we do a lot of training, support, and we also offer clinical services. So that's what school doctor is about.
So essentially, your purpose here is to increase the responsivity of the system to the need of the patient.
Yes.
In addition to treating the patient.
Yes.
That is via early detection, early education of everybody. And that actually links into another area of yours, this early intervention matters. What's that about?
So early intervention matters is part of what has come through from my interest, because I found out that actually giving people education and advocating helps people to be more responsive and more aware. And so Early Intervention Matters is set up as a podcast series and on the to enable families to be able to go listen to the podcast, be able to think about if their child has a difficulty, be able to get help from there, listen to different series. So in that podcast series, I interview people, families who have gone through the process. I interview young people who have actually had their diagnosis and they're doing well as well, or people who have faced challenges. So it's not just me educating, it's also interviewing people with different challenges to be able to help get information out. So it's a, it's, it's a hub of information, and I'm quite thrilled about it because I've been now able to speak to lots of young people. I learn a lot from young people and children. I like talking to children and getting their perspective, and this helps me as well.
Fantastic. Well done. That's a good job. And we'd like to have access to you before the end of the program. We certainly like to know how to get access to this valuable information, because it is available to everybody. We all improve. Okay. We have a constant guest on our program, LJ Daddy. And LJ Daddy will probably be speaking with you because he needs advice. LJ Daddy, welcome to Doctor's Round.
Hello. Doctor, please, can you hear me? This is LJ Daddy. My name is Lazizi Jacob. Please, doctor, they say you are the expert, ma. Please. It's my son, Augustine. Hey. He doesn't hear a word. He's different to other children. His mother, Liliana, and I, we're always disagreeing about him. Augustine, in one way, he's very sharp. At the age of 4, he already knew his 12 times table. Sharp! Very sharp boy. But in other ways, just trouble. No one can touch his things. It will be fight. When visitor come to the house, he will go to his room. I say, Augustine, come and greet the visitors. He will just come. He won't look at them. He will say hello, hello, and then go away. He will look at people in a different way. School, they are complaining about him. He does not play with the other children. Sometimes they say he's fighting. We go to a shop. He will be touching everything in the shop. I said, Augustine, don't touch something there. You know, we go to party or worship. He will say he wants to go home. And when he goes to his room, he's just there quiet. You won't even know his home. His mother, I said to the mother, maybe it's the way we are talking to him. The mother said, no, it's another way. Someone said, maybe sometime that I should beat him. But I can't beat him. It's not good to beat a child. Please, doctor, please, you are the expert. Please, can you help me? Augustine, please. Thank you, doctor. Thank you. ZJ Daddy, thank you.
There you have it. What's going on, doctor?
Thank you, Mr. LJ. Thank you. And it's so good to be able to hear about Augustine and, you know, all the strength that Augustine has, because I've heard lots of good things about Augustine. Now, when I hear a child who is very smart, particularly smart from very early life, and he's doing very well in some areas, but then there's some areas that are not in the way that other children should be, I begin to look more into what could be going on, because this doesn't look like Augustine is deliberately trying not to interact with people. So there are some things that Mr. LJ Daddy has talked about. One, he said, Augustine does not like to be around when visitors are there. So Augustine has some difficulties with communication. So when children have difficulties with communicating with other people, so somebody like a child like Augustine, you expect him, when there are people around, he will smile, he will listen. When they ask him questions, he should answer, and he should be able to answer them and, you know, maybe sometimes ask some questions. But it sounds like anytime somebody comes in, Augustine wants to be on his own in his room. So Augustine has some difficulties with communication. Augustine also, it sounds as if Augustine is very particular about his things. So when people touch his things, he gets very upset and he can throw a tantrum and he can fight. This kind of behavior, you find it in children who have autism spectrum disorder. They are very particular about their things. They want their things done in a particular way. If somebody moves his bottle from one place to the other, Augustine will know. Maybe another child of Mr. LJ will not even notice that the mother or father have gone into the room. But Augustine will notice if you just move that thing from one place to the other. So when you see a child that is very particular, maybe his shoe is different, or his socks, maybe there's a particular socks he likes to wear all the time, or some particular clothes, he's very particular about certain things, you begin to wonder, I think there might be something here. Also, Augustine does not like loud noises. So sometimes when you take him to parties, And we know how our parties are in our society. It will be loud music, plenty of people drumming, so many sounds. People are shouting. That disturbs them, and it can make them very unsettled, because that noise, you and I are fine in that noise, but their brain is like somebody is hitting their head with those sounds, with even sound that everybody would tolerate. It would be as if somebody is using something to bang their head. Yeah. So that is why Augustine will become uncomfortable, and he will run away, and he just wants to go and hide somewhere. That's why he wants to go home so quickly. And then when he goes to the shop, some children with autism, they have what we call sensory seeking behaviors. They want to be feeling and touching things. Sometimes they go and smell things constantly. They have that need to keep feeling and touching. So I think that LJ Daddy should take Augustine to seek some help so that people will be able to look into it. Because Augustine is not being naughty. Augustine is not being naughty. Augustine is showing some difficulties with communication, social interaction, that's interacting with people, and also what we call sensory behaviors. And he also has particular interests, some things he's very good at. So these are some of the things we see in children with autism.
Interesting. So that is very helpful, because you've been able to tell us some of the early signs and the domains that are affected by autism spectrum disorder. Now, the question is this a single disorder? What is autism spectrum disorder? Or is it disorders, a group of disorders?
So, autism spectrum disorder, we call it a neurodevelopmental disorder. The reason being that our brain is the site of development. How we learn to talk, to communicate, to interact, all those things is the brain that helps to program it. And because development is the way we grow and adapt and change, so you find these behaviors from very early on. What we find with autism is that there is a particular pattern that you see, that the children who have difficulties in these areas with their communication, their social interaction, and certain interests and some rigid behaviors, that when you see children presenting with these behaviors, they present in a similar way. And those collection of behaviors is what we look at, and we have to assess them in a standard way. But this is what we look at to see how much is it affecting the child's functioning. So, Dr. Ahmed, I heard you talking about the functional impairment when you started. Functional impairment means that these behaviors, is it affecting the person so much that they can't even do their day-to-day things? So, for example, in school, if these behaviors, like the sensory behaviors, the social interaction, prevent somebody like Augustine from staying in school and doing his work, then it's going to impair him. So he can't sit in school and learn, because any noise disrupts him. If anything changes, it disrupts him. And that's why you find sometimes some children will run out of the class and not be able to stay in the class, because everything is too much and people don't understand. In an adult person, it can affect the person's relationship at home. It can affect their relationship at work. They might say, oh, this person is a difficult person. He's always fighting. He's always having trouble with his co-workers. He's always having trouble. It might be the pattern of difficulties with communication and social interaction. The people with autism, their brain is very specific looking at things. So if they see somebody that maybe touches them on the side, that person may just be passing and touching them on the side, and they will scream and misinterpret it and think that person is fighting them.
Oh, yeah.
Because they are not able, their brain is not able to look at the whole picture. So they keep misinterpreting it. So maybe their mom will tell them something and they will think that they have done the worst thing to them, and then they will overreact. So that is what we call functional impairment. It is impairing them from interacting well at home, at school and with their peers. They can't make friends because their friends do get tired of them, that what is even wrong with this child? He's always screaming and all that. So that's why it's so important for us to understand autism. So it's a disorder.
It is very interesting, though, because you're talking about variability in emotional responsiveness, variability in even sensory responsiveness. Here's a guy who is sensitive to noise, yet is sensation-seeking in certain areas.
Yes.
Isn't that so?
Yes.
So these are some of the things here. This is fascinating. Yes. And we'd like to know some more. You're listening to Doctor's Round on Spirit of Nigeria Radio and our sister radio in Ibadan, live radio on 107.5 FM. And we're talking about that very important topic here, autism spectrum disorder. You've talked about a number of things. What then is the process of diagnosing? How do you come as a physician? If LJ Daddy decide to bring Augustine to you, what is the process that you should expect?
So when LJ Daddy comes to me, the first thing, so there are two aspects to the assessment. One aspect is what we call the parent interview. Because there is no blood test or brain scan to diagnose autism. There is none. So the way this is diagnosed is, one, the doctor who is going to see LJ Augustine wants to know everything from when Augustine's mother was pregnant, all the events that happened around pregnancy, because we know certain things that can happen around pregnancy, even sometimes stress and difficulties during the pregnancy itself, whatever the mother drinks or, you know, takes, can affect the baby's brain. And we want to know all those things. We want to know about the delivery, because we know that some children, the process of delivering that child may have been so difficult, it may have affected aspects of the child's brain. We want to know about the early development. Was the child doing the things he was supposed to do at the right time? Was he sitting? Was he walking? Was he talking at the right time? Because we know that some children with autism have developmental delay. They have delay in doing the things they're supposed to do at the right time. And as we said before, your brain development is this, your brain is where all your development is taking place. When things are working well, you walk, you talk, you do things well. But if there's something, sometimes something wrong with the connection, it's just like electrical wires, then things may not happen the way they're supposed to happen. Then we want to know, what was Augustine like when he was a baby?
Right.
Was he a very settled baby? Was he the one that Mama Liliana had to be carrying him all the time, that he would never want to go, you know, if you put him down, he will always want to be crying or things like that? Or was he the one that you can leave him, he will not even know whether there's anybody around? So there's so many things the doctor is asking. And asking everything from when Augustine was a baby to when he started nursery to when he started growing up. Asking things about the social interaction, the speech, the communication. What kind of things did Augustine like playing with? What kind of toys? If you give him another toy, did he prefer one particular toy? What kind of thing? So you're asking a lot of questions, because it is helping the doctor to understand that, okay, this Augustine, he's been doing these things from very early on, and it's just becoming more obvious. Then the other part of the assessment is what we call an observation assessment, and that part is with Augustine. So the clinician and will do some activities with Augustine to see how Augustine reacts when he's faced with some activities. That helps them. It's almost like creating a social environment, but seeing how Augustine reacts. So those kind of assessments is helping to see, how does Augustine come in? Does he look at me when I'm talking to him? Is he listening to me? Do I have to call him 10 times? Do I have to touch him before he looks at me? If I'm trying to play something with him, is he taking it away? Does he not want me to join him in the play? are there some things that Augustine is focused on? And things like that is the observation part of the assessment. And then we also get information from other people who have seen Augustine. The teacher will ask them, how is Augustine doing in school? How is he with his classmates and everybody? So carrying all that information together will help us to see which of those symptoms are present. And then we have what we call guidelines. Those guidelines are international. They help us so that we don't diagnose everybody with autism. They help us to be clear about when we are diagnosing people. So there are certain things that before you give a diagnosis, the person must have. And so we look at it and then decide whether Augustine has autism or not.
Yeah, so basically you gather this information from history, comprehensive, you observe the child and then compare them with agreed upon standardized criteria.
Yeah.
Right. I have a question. Sorry, I have a question here. And this is from Zaria. There are adults with similar behavior as Augustine. Do they also have autism? They do not make friends and speak little with their family. This is from Ronke Olaguju. That's the question that she sent from Zaria.
Thank you, Ronke. That's a very important question. Like we said, autism starts from very young, neurodevelopmental. So those adults that have not had the opportunity to be assessed, to be diagnosed when they were children, they will continue to have those behaviors. Nobody will see that. Most times we used to say those people are queer. We'll say, that person is such a queer person. He does not talk to people. He does not do this. He's only just minding his own business. A lot of all those people most likely have autism. They've just not had the opportunity to be assessed. So those behaviors will still be there. When I started practicing, I started thinking about so many people within my family and outside my family who I said, these people must have had autism. It helped me to understand their behavior better. But before then, we were blaming them. Look at this person. So he doesn't talk to people. He's a queer person. But my understanding of things now has helped me to understand that those people most likely had autism spectrum disorder. So yes, those kind of symptoms are still present. But when you go back and ask their mother or ask their family, they will tell you they were like that as a child.
On Doctor's Run, we like to enjoy ourselves too. And we're going to be listening to some music. I like to treat our guest. What music would you like to listen to? And I hope you not be oversensitive to the music. What would you like to listen to? Tell me.
Oh, I would like to listen to T.Y. Bello, Greenland, if I can be treated to that.
Thank you. So you see, we're going to give you that because we want to positively reinforce this good behavior. And I'm sure you're going to be talking about positive reinforcement when we come to treatment.
Yeah.
Toyi, can we treat this lady?
It's green for me. standing alone can be a heavy load. But my vows I won't be breaking, though my heart is aching. I got a word and I won't let go. It's your will I'm seeking, so I keep on believing. I see it now, I understand, I know. So I embrace it, dance. Once again, it's time for me to grow. For every prayer and every tear I've sown, Lord of the harvest knows I'm reaping joy a hundredfold. The land is green, it's green, oh, oh. The land is green, it's green, can't you see? The harvest is ready, 'cause the Lord of the harvest told me so. It's green for me. I thought it was over, thought you were done with me. But we're just beginning, whoa, my life is a journey. I will walk with you, I will go where you want me to, yes, I will go.
Come on.
Muted. Welcome back to Doctor's Round. I was just carried away watching Dr. Tarkon dancing away to that music. I never knew doctors enjoy themselves so much. Well, after the hard work you do, you know what, Doc, I wouldn't blame you for enjoying yourself. Let's come back to business here. You've talked about the diagnosis and so on and so forth. I would like to know, is there any advantage in early diagnosis? We heard from the one of our listeners about adult. Is there any advantage to it? Does it affect the prognosis in any way?
Yes, thank you, Dr. Ahmed. It is so important to diagnose children early, because when you do, you put in those support early, and you put in those structures early, and you help that child to become more functional. So, for example, say, let's go back to Augustine. If Augustine is finding it difficult in the church and all that when things are loud, Augustine, once the church people are aware, there can be a quieter place that Augustine can stay. And he can have things like headphones to help dampen the noise. So he can enjoy going out with the family and all that. A lot of children who don't get diagnosed on time have a lot of miserable time. Sometimes they are bullied. Sometimes because people don't understand them, they can bully them. Or the school don't understand them. They think they are naughty. They exclude them. Many children with autism are being out of school because people could not diagnose them.
Oh.
And I've seen children with autism because I do some assessments for young people who have missed being diagnosed early. Some of them end up in prisons or in secure units because people don't understand why they react the way they react. And then when they react the way they react, they can do some dangerous things. And as a result, maybe like hit somebody. That hitting somebody is not because they wanted to hit the person. It is because things were too much for them. They didn't know how to communicate it. And the first person on their side, they just lash out because they cannot regulate their emotions. Now, some of them have ended up in secure units because they look at that offense as being criminal. So people don't understand. So many of these young people have suffered so much. Many of them end up even having mental health problems, anxiety, depression. Some of them can be so depressed to the point that they want to even end their lives because they've not been able to learn how to communicate those feelings, to be able to talk to people around them. And some of them self-harm. They do things to themselves because they are frustrated. They don't know how to communicate with anybody. So they start doing things to themselves. So many, many, many who have not been diagnosed on time end up having all these problems. They cannot keep a job. They cannot finish school. The house is miserable. They cannot move forward with their lives. Now, if you diagnose them early and you enable people to know how to support them, they can go to school. They can function in school. They can come out with an education. You can find what they like and you can channel their interest towards that area and support them. So we have lots of people who, I mean, one of my children with autism, one of the children I see with autism, he's fantastic at playing instruments. When you see him playing instruments, he plays at the opera level. You know, he can perform in big, you know, to the standard of a theater performance. But when the people, before he got diagnosed, people didn't understand him. They were always, you know, sending him home and all those things. So this is why it is so important. We cannot stress it enough.
So it's basically, so early diagnosis help us to adapt the environment so that we capitalize on their strengths and help them to be the best that they can be.
Absolutely.
That's interesting. That sounds to good reasoning. Now, tell me, are there comorbidities? Are there other disorders that are common with individuals who have autism spectrum disorder?
Yes, there's quite a number of other disorders. So when we assess people for autism, we are also exploring whether all these other things are present, all these other conditions. So we screen for so many other conditions because we know autism commonly occurs with other conditions. So one common one is ADHD, which is attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. So children with autism can struggle to concentrate. They can be very lively. They can do things without thinking about it. And they can be so impulsive that it's they struggle to sit down to learn. So we screen for that because if you diagnose a child with autism and you haven't taken care of the other bits, then that child will still struggle. Some children with autism have what we call intellectual disability or they have learning difficulties. Now, if you don't, you have many children with autism who don't have learning difficulties. They're very smart, but you do have a certain number who have learning difficulties. And it is important that those children have that assessment to see whether they have needs that needs to be supported. Because if you don't, just dealing with the autism itself is not going to address the learning difficulties side. Anxiety, depression, mood problems are very common. Obsessive behaviors are very common. So it is important to screen for all these things so that you can help support the children. Sleep problems are also very common. So there are quite a number of things. There are some medical conditions that are very common. So epilepsy, you know, convulsions is very common in children with autism. So it's important to screen for that.
Here's a question for you, doctor, from somebody in Abuja. In Nigeria, autism could be misinterpreted to mean being possessed by evil spirit or demons. People tend to run to churches for help instead of addressing it medically. How can we change this narrative?
Thank you so much. This is one of the reasons why I am so interested in advocacy and education. And I know that there's so many people out there. You know, I'm from that community as well. And one of the ways we can do this is by education. Education and also showcasing where children who have had their assessments done and been supported have behaved, have functioned better. Because when these families see that actually my child is having the same concerns like another child who has been diagnosed and treated or supported, and that that child is functioning better, then things are a lot better. So there's so much education that we need to do, so much we need to do. The churches need to be a hub for education. I have seen so many times where people will be, families will be told that their child has concerns, and sometimes they get the negative aspect from the churches saying, no, there's nothing wrong with your child, or, you know, that's not possible. We need the churches and our places of worship to be part of the awareness program, part of the education system. We need all hands on deck to be able to do this awareness so that people can find it easy. They don't shouldn't feel stigmatized or feel, oh, I'm going to get an assessment for my child. We need to be out there. Doctors, professionals, we need to also come together and send that message out. Educating schools, educating people is so important. So I can't stress much more how the importance of education.
A child, what you're saying, yes, is doctor, is that a child with autism or with autism spectrum disorder is not possessed by a demon.
No,
the child has a health problem and we need to recognize it. And the child is not bad. The child is not mad. We may make the child bad if we do not respond appropriately. Recognizing it is very important. That's a strong message, and that's one thing that we all have to bear in mind. You're still listening to Doctors Radio on Spirit of Nigeria, Doctors Round on Spirit of Nigeria Radio and our sister radio in Ibadan, Life Radio 107.5. And we're talking about this very important, and today is really hot. There's another question here from, I don't know where this person is talking from, but they said that some autistic children cannot talk. They just make sounds in addition to some of the traits you have mentioned earlier on, doctor. How do you care for such a child, especially concerning his education and overall functioning?
Thank you. So I want to start on the premise that every child can communicate. It's just the way we have to get that communication out of the child. So talking is just one way a child can communicate. There are other ways the child can communicate, just by things like a child who can't talk can understand and can do things like using their eyes to direct you to what they want, which we call nonverbal communication. Sometimes the child can lead you by the hand, but we also have things like using picture cards. So we do, when we are supporting children with autism, we have people like the speech and language therapists who work with the parents to help them to put those common things that the child encounters in the environment in form of pictures. And that child can tell you what they want. By use of pictures, they can put pictures together to be able to indicate what they want. Right. Some parents have to learn how to sign. So there's signing that you can use to communicate with a child who is nonverbal. Many of my patients come to the clinic and we can communicate. The child is not talking.
There you go.
They can communicate with me using, because you have to look at the whole child. So as a parent, we understand. As the child is growing, we are learning how to understand our child. We will know when the child is upset, when the child is happy. We know certain things about the child. And that's the part the parent plays. In you study your child, you know what they like, you know certain things, and you begin to look at alternative ways of communicating with that child. And that same alternative ways of communicating can be used at school. So there are all kinds of ways of communicating. And now with what we call the electronic age, it's even better. There are computerized ways in which are available for children to communicate. Some patients will come and type in a whole sentence of what they want to say to me. They can't talk verbally, but they will do that. And that voice thing will talk for them what they are trying to tell me. So they can go to school, they can learn. So not being able to talk verbally is not a barrier to learning. We need to know where that child is functioning. If that child has intellectual disability, then the learning has to be adapted for that child so that they will be learning things that is appropriate for their developmental age, but they can still learn and they can still communicate.
We're having a lot of questions today. I have a question here from Bumi. And Bumi says, I have a child that has most of the features you've discussed. I work in the university. The child has been treated with some medication for anxiety. And there's also the time to say, my child has depression. These appear not to be taking care of his problem. What other treatment will you recommend for this child?
Thank you, Bumi. Thank you for sharing the issues with your child. So the first thing I would say is that we need to understand, your child needs to be seen by a professional to actually see whether your child meets the criteria for an autism spectrum disorder. Many children with autism spectrum disorder do not need medication if they do not, So if your child is getting upset and they're just treating with medication, it's not going to solve the problem. It's about understanding what are the things that your child gets upset about. So children with autism, sometimes it's just when there's a change that they are not expecting or something happens suddenly that they are not expecting, that can upset them, that can make them really distressed, that can make them cry. So there are things that you can address by behavioral adaptations, you understanding why that child gets upset and distressed and knowing what to do, because medication is not the answer. You can keep treating and treating and treating. You won't get the benefits because the problem is not being addressed. So the first thing I would say is that your child needs to have an assessment to see whether they meet the criteria for autism spectrum disorder, and then the right interventions to help the child communicate, because you want to empower your child to be able to communicate how he feels. And like I said, there are ways of making that child communicate their feelings to you, even if they can't talk verbally.
Our listeners are really listening to you. I have lots of questions coming in today. It's very interactive, and we have very little time to go. Here's a question here. In our educational system, we use Western, A for apple, B for bear, etc. However, not all are familiar to our children. Is this abstract for children in Nigeria with autism? Is this an abstraction? Should we use more familiar object when we're talking? I think that's what the question here wanted to know. Should we use more familiar, culturally sensitive approach than this?
I like that question so much because it is what I always want to stress with when we are using the tools in the Western world to look at our children with developmental difficulties. It doesn't work because those tools outside have been standardized for children out here. So there are many things that are not familiar to the children in our country. So absolutely, I think we should begin to look at what are those culturally relevant things that our children are more familiar with that we can use in actually getting them and educating them. I used to come to Nigeria once a year to do some training for doctors in UCH. And one of those things was developmental assessment. And I remember when we go to do developmental assessment, there will be all these things that are foreign. Yeah. Whereas they will say, you're assessing fine motor skills. but the children are not familiar with those things. Why can't we look at other things that children do in Nigeria? Threading things, you understand, there are things they do, sweeping, other motor activities that they can do that we can use in assessing how they're doing instead of relying on what is in the Western world. This is where I feel that we need to be looking at culturally relevant assessments and support.
So we better be assessing what we're assessing.
Yes.
Not cultural skills. We should be assessing motor skills using culturally sensitive material.
Yes.
We have one more question. I know time is gone. The question is very simple. This one came from Abu again in Abuja. There's some reading there. Is ASD inherited? They want to know if you can inherit it. That's what they're saying. Can you inherit autism spectrum disorder? Quickly, in 2 seconds.
Yeah. So I would say that we have a large number of children where there's a large component of ASD, which is genetic in origin. So if you have family members with ASD, there is a risk of ASD happening in the child. It's not a single gene that has been identified. There's a lot of research going on, but you find out that when there's family members of ASD, and this is one of the questions we ask when we are assessing, then there's a risk in the family. And that's why when you have twins, identical twins, if one twin has ASD, there's a likelihood, a strong likelihood that the second twin may have strong features of ASD. So yes, but it's not the only cause, but there's a lot of genetic risk. And there's some genetic conditions which we can assess for where they can also present with ASD. So here in the Western world, we can do what we call genetic tests and pick up some abnormalities in the gene. And a lot of those children will have features of ASD.
What you're saying, in essence, is regardless of the gene,
yeah,
the nurturing environment is very important.
Yeah,
you may not be able to change the gene, but you may be able to change the outcome.
Yes.
So the battle between nature and nurture goes on. Understanding the disease, understanding the problem, helps you to create a nurturing environment that will capitalize on the strengths of this individual because they have a lot to offer the community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you because as a parent, the nurturing environment means you begin to understand your child very early. You begin to put in place those things that you see that are your child's strengths. You begin to reduce those things that cause your child more distress. And you are able to also inform other people, the schools and all that. So you are building a safe landing harbor for your child. It's like giving your child a safe landing pad. So you may have these difficulties, but because of that safe harbor and safe landing pad, it has less, kind of more challenging difficulties, and they can learn. You can bring in those things to support them as opposed to if they're not there.
Doc, I know time is always short for us. We've come again to the end of today's Doctor's Round. We never have enough time on this program. And I thank you very much on behalf of all the listeners. This is a very important condition that we need to pay attention to. And I hope that you come back again when we call on you and we make sure that we attend. By the way, how do we get to listen to your podcast? Can you give the address quickly?
So the podcast, we're just overhauling the website, but I will send it out so that it's on Spirit of Nigerian Radio once it's out. But it's going to be on a website, www.drtacon.com. But once it's ready, we'll send you the link as well.
Fantastic. We're going to be partnering this. We're going to make Nigeria work because we have a stake in that country. Thank you very much to Spirit of Nigeria Radio. Thank you to Dr. Ayonride. And thank you to all our listeners. And thank you for participating. Keeping the questions coming because with your questions, we're more active, we're able to do a better job. See you next week on Spirit of Nigeria Radio. Keep well, keep safe, and keep listening to Spirit of Nigeria Radio and Live Radio in Dubai, 107.5.
Nigeria Radio.